Radio 212, complex.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
This is towards the end of my coverage, so I wonder if Chris is still on?
Yes, hi. I am.
Hello.
Did you see him throw that thing?
Yeah, I did. Man, I saw him give it a good chuck the same way my kid does whenever he's through. My kid picked up that habit a few months ago where, like, we'll hear his door open and we go to, like, hey, you know, go back to bed. No, his cup's just empty. He just throws it out. Just, now I'm done. Here's your cup. I got your empty cup for you. So, yeah, it was very much the same way. Well, like, I've seen him do it with the little tablet that he has where he's done and he just, whoop. Like throws it over his shoulder and it's like, yeah, I'm glad you threw that on a couch.
Yeah, and it's really scary when tech, can get damaged so easily. So it's good to know that there are products out there for kids. And meant for kids. It's meant for spill proof, it's meant for throwing like that. It is drop proof, but he threw it. And it's
that was one that I definitely wrote down the website of, just because last year I got an Octobo for my son, after CES, and he loves his Octobo.
It's adorable.
Like literally the other day I turned around the corner and I heard like, I love you, Octobo. And he was hugging it. And like the tablet wasn't even in it, you know?
Adorable.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, it's interesting to see how that relationship with technology can be built. But my son is one of those that I want to get him started coding early, where, like, if he doesn't have his own WordPress site by the age of 10, that's my fault. I'm the negligent one there, you know.
And it's definitely good to start early, and it's cool that this product will do that.
Exactly. If that's something that can start teaching him those principles, heck, man, I'll get it and use it for a year before him so I can learn more coding.
Well, I will leave you to finish off the rest of the coverage for, day three, the last day. You got this. The home stretch. We're all going to come back at 8:00 Eastern. So I'll see you in about an hour and a half.
Absolutely. See you in a bit.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, thank you so much, Danielle, for that great intro. Chris Jordan here, host of the Talking Sound podcast in Austin, Texas. I'd like to thank the Tech Podcast Network for having me yet again this year, as well as Scott Ertz, Plug Hits Live, Geek News Central, GNC Week in Review, all you guys. It's great to be able to work with y'all and cover this amazing event. I myself am an AV technician and typically am out at this event as we're loading in. CES is loading out, and last year was the first time that I got to like shake hands officially with CES and not be like, hey, get out of my way. So it was really cool to see the way that the space was used before us, as well as all the amazing technology there. Speaking of which, we have our first guest here. Let me see if I get this right. Juntech. Ryan is our representative here. How are you doing today? Ryan, are you there? Hello? Well, maybe not. I hear somebody there in the background, but hello, Ryan? Ryan, are you there? Chris Jordan here with the Talking Sound Podcast, Tech Podcast Network. Okay, I believe that his audio may be mute there. He's audio only, so, and that's all right.
Anyone can hear me?
Yes, hello, Ryan. Pleasure to talk with you. Chris Jordan. Hello, Ryan. And there are those mysterious tech gremlins that we were talking about earlier that seem to just pop up at these great moments. Ryan, hello? Oh, well, he can't hear us. We can't hear him through the chat. So I'm interested to talk with him. They were a stabilizer and gimbal company. And man, I am all about that kind of stuff, especially whenever it comes to production, live production, everything else. I see that we're working on getting another guest in studio. But yeah, it's been amazing to see some of the technology that's been premiered here at CES 2021. The stuff that Scott was talking about earlier, with the ultrasonic, the ultrasonic send receive units, things like that, that are accurate up to a crazy like millimeter dimension. To see technology like that being micro miniaturized into units the size of LEDs is phenomenal. To see what that could be used for in terms of droid control, or not droid control, but drone control, things like that is just amazing. I think we're trying to bring Steve Lim on from FixBid. Is that correct? Hello, Stephen. Nope. Hello? One, two, no, okay. There he is. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing great. Is this Stephen?
Hey, yeah, this is Stephen Lim.
Pleasure, pleasure. Tell us a little bit about FixBid, what it is, and what inspired your product over here.
Yeah, no, happy to. Thanks for having me on here this afternoon. Yeah, so just to give you just a high level of what FixBid is, we are a mobile-based application that's essentially servicing customers like you and me and connecting us with qualified and reliable contractors for your home service needs. And really, the genesis of this app was our two co-founders just thought today that, hey, there's just so much ambiguity around finding the right contractor, finding reliable contractors. And really, there really hasn't been a product out there today which is easy for both customer as well as the contractors to find one another and just to really, get started on that home project.
You know, as a contractor myself, I do a lot of install work or did a lot of install work a while back in the audiovisual realm. And yeah, it is hard to find a contractor that you can trust with your project, that you know is certified, that you know is insured, bonded, all that kind of stuff. Let's go into a little bit of your system, your vetting, you know, how you, I don't want you to get too proprietary or anything like that. You know, I don't want let me take some good notes so I can compete properly. But you know, how do you guys go about narrowing this field? Because we had somebody on yesterday who was kind of a Robin Hood in reverse, where instead of you going blind into a field that you may know nothing about, which would very much be in the contracting field as well, where you may not know, like, hey, if I knew the right AC contractor to call, I'd just call the right AC contractor.
Yep.
You know, like there would be no question. I wouldn't even have to hit the phone book. I know who I'm calling. So how do you guys go through a vetting process like that with your, I guess, with the people that you're connecting people with the with the end vendor?
Right. No, and absolutely. And just for all, you know, just to make sure we're all on the same page, our hyper focus is on the customer. And so just like you had mentioned, right? I mean, when we just think about what a customer would want to see, you know, obviously we want to make sure that, you know, us as the company that they're interfacing with, that the contractors we're providing them have really just gone through the right vetting processes, that they're top of the line, that people aren't necessarily just talking with, just people who they don't know and can't trust on the other end. And so our approach actually to this, to solve this problem, has really just been partnering with just the right rating agencies. And we've actually come to find that there are a number of, you know, local rating agencies that work with, you know, local vendors just to really understand their business, to understand their customers, and who do very thorough, who do a really thorough job of understanding, who their portfolio of contractors are. And so, you know, specifically for us, you know, I just want to give a quick shout out to one of our top partners today. They're called the American Rating Corporation, and they give out these, diamond certified certificates to their specific vendors. And so we really found that the partnerships that we've been able to build sort of as we're starting up this platform has just been just an integral part of helping us become successful.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Gearing into things such as that, Better mm-hmm. Business Bureau locally, that kind of things are only going to give you the top level people in those localized areas. So, like you said, the fact that you are focusing on the end product being the customer and what mm-hmm. they're looking for in a contractor.
Yeah.
That's really fantastic. Now, what is some of the technology that y'all have leveraged to start making this happen?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question, right? And like we mentioned before, we're a mobile based app. And what we also kind of came to find is when we looked at the landscape today, some of the key competitors out there, which I'm sure are names that we've all heard, right? You have the TaskRabbits of the world. You've got the Home Advisors of the world. And while their scale and their reach is great, these are just really like lead generation companies. And so, we talk about the focus being on the customer, but, you know, at times too, we also want to make sure that we're providing a great service for contractors. And I know for folks who have services that they are willing and ready to provide, it can be a very expensive process to try to find, you know, the right project and the right customer for the services they're able to provide. And sure. So what Fixbit actually has done is in the pool of these contractors who have been, you know, vetted by our partner rating agencies, the process and the actual the workflow goes where once a project is uploaded into our mobile application, it's a bid. And it's an undisclosed bid where really you as a customer will receive all the different estimates that you get from these contractors. And the great thing about this is there's no fees to the contractor until the actual project is accepted by the customer at the end.
Wow, that's actively cool. to know that you've set the system that way. Now, I have a couple of questions.
Yeah.
One would be just out of the blue, I would have to know, of course, there's no way for somebody to go on and pay for more space, pay for more advertising space to list themselves up higher in the rankings, right? There's no way to game that system.
Exactly. Right now, that's not a feature that we have. And so really it's anyone's game. And I think, the contractors that you're going to find have success are the ones who are proactive, who are, you know, detailed with their responses and their estimates sure. and their quotes back to the customers. And so, we really do want to create a level playing field. And by no means is this necessarily just a solution for the customers. But, you know, what we really, really would love to see is to also help contractors have a fair shot at projects that perhaps they maybe wouldn't have otherwise had, just due to the upfront cost from a marketing perspective.
Sure, sure. And I guess two more questions that I would have. One would be, is there like a price gauge that the customer can set? Like, I'm looking for somebody in this price range. Like, hey, you know, somebody mm-hmm. could come put in a fence, or somebody could come put in a fence. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's honestly a part of the customer journey that we're still investigating as we listen to the feedback from our customers. Because, you know, to your point, no one contractor is the same, right? And yeah. So to that end, what really is going to happen is we're starting to see kind of this marketplace develop where contractors are beginning to say, hey, you know, normally for this service, I've quoted this amount in the past, but you know, for all these projects that are not coming up, I'm not getting these bids. And so, yeah. you know, what it kind of does is it sets this market for certain services. And to your point, we haven't necessarily put in some type of price range for these projects. But, sure. you know, but again, that'll definitely be a feature that we look further into, for the future iterations of the app.
Yeah. And I mean, this is fantastic, especially for people like me that, even if you started focusing it out in other branching out into other brands, other markets, you know, yeah. like, I mean, there's a whole world of use for that in the world of AV technicians, AV contractors.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely fantastic platform and concept.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't mean to interrupt. Apologies, but no. I mean you hit the nail on the head, right? Because I think we're coming to find more and more. You know, we're living in a world where you know people want to leverage their flexibility. They want mm-hmm. to be the ones managing their own schedules. And yeah. you know, if we don't have technologies today that can really empower, you know, again, not just the customer, But the contractor, the contractor itself who really wants to go and find the work, I think we're just really excited. And in many ways, this is just the tip of the iceberg for us. So.
Yeah. I guess one question that I would have on behalf of a contractor would be, is it like a vetted bid system on that end? Coming from the customer, like this is someone who's actively interested in getting something done, or they're just a looky-loo. And is it the case that it's a blind bid system where we cannot see what the competition is bidding?
Yeah, so it's the latter to that point. And again, I think as we continue to hear that feedback, I mean, again, what we want to do is just to encourage fair pricing. Right. Yeah. Because as much as we want to incentivize the contractors to be active, we also have to think about the customer to make sure that they're getting the best price, for the actual project that they want. And so, we continue to see multiple iterations. And what's great about sort of the app today, if you get a chance to download it, is there's such a wide variety of services that we provide from plumbing to roofing to kitchen remodeling. And so
awesome.
We're just really excited. And again, we're trying to cast that wide net up front just to get a sense of, what are the recurring projects that we're seeing. But yeah. What's really great is to the point that I made earlier, we're able to kind of kill two birds with one stone by servicing both the customer and the contractor through this app.
Wow, this is really fantastic, really forward thinking in the realm of freelance contracting, that kind of stuff. Tell everybody where they can go to find out more information about FixBid, where they can go to download the app. Is it already on all markets? Is it only on Apple? Give us all shameless self-promotion time before we let you go.
Yeah, well, again, I would just encourage folks to go to gofixbid.com where they can just find more information out about our service. And actually, the service is currently up and running just for the Bay Area locales only today, but they are up on the Apple Play Store as well as the Android Store as well. So just go ahead and look up FixBid, and you should be able to see that app there.
Fantastic. Stephen, thank you so much for the time today. Enjoy the rest of your digital CES.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me.
All righty. Really cool stuff. I love seeing technology that is based toward the customer experience, but at the same time is a great tool for contractors who are being hooked up with the customer as well. We do have our next guest in studio, Adrian Nah, from Lifey Wellness. How are you today, Adrian? Hello, Adrian.
Hello, Chris. I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing great. How was your digital CES experience?
It's been going really well. Thanks for asking. We are talking to a lot of interested customers and a lot of media partners as well. After all, our product is really all about stay home wellness. And I guess, there's no bigger theme, this year, when everybody's still in lockdowns, so we're helping our users to, get a healthier lifestyle while, being in the lockdown.
Well, tell us a little bit about your product, about what it is that you guys do, everything else.
Sure. First of all, thanks for having us, on here. Really excited to share our products with everyone, with the audience. So as you can see here, this is our product suite. We see ourselves as in a very similar as in a Nespresso or Keurig, but then, we're made for wellness tonics and herbal teas. The idea is really to use a single serve capsule system to make the pursuit of wellness easier, more convenient, and cleaner for our users as well. So the product is... Go ahead.
Oh, no. Go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. Yeah, the product comprises of three parts. This is the brewer. We design and manufacture it ourselves. It's also an IoT product where our users can control using our app. So the app is currently on both iOS and Android. It's free to download. Just search for Lifey Wellness, then you'll be able to see it. So there are two main benefits with the app. The users can actually get recommendations which wellness formula to drink based on a couple of things, the body conditions, the weather, as well as the moods. For example, if I'm feeling tired, what should I drink? if I'm feeling dry, what should I drink, so on and so forth. And the third and most exciting part will be the wellness formulas that we co-create with a team of wellness professionals, including traditional medicinal practitioners, herbal scientists, as well as tea masters, to really kind of, you know, want to bring both function as well as flavor together for our users' daily enjoyment.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I myself am a practitioner of herbal medicine. I use teas, tinctures, all that kind of stuff. And I guess one of my first questions, because there are a few things that, you know, naturally taste good. But there are some things that are really good for you that don't necessarily taste good. You can take raw chamomile, put it in a you know, piece of cloth, soak it in some water, and hey, it tastes just like chamomile tea. It's great.
Yeah.
You go to do that with some other things, and it doesn't necessarily taste the best for you, like raspberry leaves, for instance, that kind of stuff. Sometimes even like passion flower, which is used to sweeten a lot of things naturally, that kind of stuff, doesn't quite have the flavor that you would think that it does as a tea on its own. Even things like blue lotus, that kind of stuff, which is really, really good for people with insomnia, that kind of thing, doesn't really taste fantastic on its own. You got to add honey and lemon and all kinds of things to make it a little bit more palatable. So, I heard you say that you're working with tea masters, herbalists, things like that. Explain to us, without getting too proprietary, of course, a little bit of the process that you use to make sure that these things that are good for gut health, good for respiratory health, allergies, all kinds of stuff. How do you guys make sure that dosages are correct and still that dosages are correct, that things are palatable?
Yeah, these are really, really great questions, and thank you for asking them. I guess, you know, I can cover the function part first and then the flavor part later. Yeah. So in terms of function, we really look at each formula from both the traditional medicine perspective, looking at the nature, you know, how it kind of pair with, you know, your body, nature, you know, how to kind of, you know, find a balance. And that's the kind of traditional medicine theory. We also look from a herbal scientific theory, as in looking into the active ingredients of each of the clinical herbs that we use and incorporate in each wellness formula. So take this formula as an example. You know, so as you can see on our app, what I'm drinking is a reishi mushroom and aged tangerine pu'er tea. So reishi mushroom is a very powerful adaptogen, and I'm sure, you know, it's gaining its popularity in the US as well. So in the app, our users can actually see, what are the health benefits, what are the active ingredients that brings those, benefits, and also in terms of the nature, how it pairs with your body. And then, they can also see the flavor, you know, we have a flavor profile here, you know, a description of, more details of, the health benefits that they can expect and the ingredients here, you know, what we do is, work with this team that I just mentioned, through a very, very, very long, R&D process, with a lot of R&D tests and trial and errors, and involving focus groups, and also, you know, working with test labs as well, to really look at how each herb, you know, kind of pair, you know, with each other to create a wellness formula that serves a very specific purpose. Like you mentioned, you know, in this stressful time during the lockdowns, a lot of people are having problems with like having a really good quality of sleep. So we do have a sleep. We do have two formulas that improving sleep quality. One is our sleep formula. We use a chamomile, rhubarb, and chrysanthemum. And then we have another formula, which is infused with broad spectrum CBD. And then we use a mix of herbs like rosehip, rosella, and pear, apple pomace, so on and so forth, to kind of really bring out the balance of the flavor as well. And that brings me to the flavor part. We do work with a team of tea masters and a lot of kind of focus groups to figure out, you know, how we can make certain kind of superfood ingredient, not just functional, but at the same time, when they pair it with other tea, fruit,
sure.
And you know, other kind of herbal ingredients, they taste good. If something does not taste good, you know, our users will likely to just drink once, and that's kind of defeating the purpose of achieving a daily wellness.
Yeah, yeah, precisely, because just like with any kind of medication or anything like that, you're not going to take one pill and feel better.
You know, exactly. Like
it might, but it's going to take a little while for that lasting effect to take effect, because it's got to get into your body, and your body's got to get accustomed to it. So it's kind of the same thing with herbal teas, that kind of stuff. It really is the fact that you have to use them for a little while. Increase the dosage little by little, that kind of stuff. Which is what I was saying. Like, on occasion, once you get up to that medicinal dose, that's like, hey, okay, now this is good for you. Sometimes it just don't taste that great. So to know that you guys are, like you were saying, working with exotic tea professionals, that kind of stuff, people who are used to taking traditional teas and bringing them into a modern market with a modern flavor profile, things like that. Because, hey, some people might enjoy the taste of dried and ground up reishi mushrooms. You know, it almost looks and has the consistency of coffee, and is used and is used in addition to a lot of coffees for people who drink coffee a lot to help their gut flora, stuff like that. Because caffeine can kind of have a little kick on that and not be so great for you. So, yeah, it's used as a filler in a lot of, you know, different coffees, stuff like that. But coffee covers that taste. So to
exactly.
know that you guys have worked with professionals to actively make these things more palatable, more generally acceptable by people is great. Now, that's a cool little device that you have going in the background. Is that the brewing medium that you have there in between your cup and the product?
Exactly. So it seems like, Chris, you are a truly a traditional medicinal enthusiast. So, you know, it's really, you know, cool to talk to people who are really into wellness. And this is exactly the brewer, as you mentioned. So it kind of is an IoT product, as I mentioned. So perhaps, you know, I can show everyone, you know, how we can brew, you know, with the brewer real quick. So
sure.
There are two ways to control the brewer. So for users who don't want to use the app, you know, they can just like press a button, and then, you know, it kind of runs a quick brewing mode. So with a kind of bloom and brew technology, the brewer delivers a fresh cup of wellness tonic in just 40 seconds. And later on, you will see the main difference in terms when it comes to the technology, like when compared with, like, for example, like a Nespresso or Keurig machine, we have like a pre-infusion, we call the blooming stage, where a hot stream of water, you know, actually runs through the pot to kind of steam and extract all the nutrients and flavor from the natural and raw herb. Because we're a wellness company, we do not use concentrates, extracts, or powder.
Fantastic.
You know, anything nasty. Like some of the blends would taste naturally sweet, but they come from fruits. You know, we do not add sugar. So we really kind of put a lot of emphasis when figuring out the wellness formula. So and these tubes inside, they're actually our pots. We call them herbal discs. It looks like a disc format. And then basically inside is airtight, kind of freshly chopped herbs. So you can find like tea leaves, adaptogens like ginseng, reishi mushrooms, you know, depending on the blend, of course, right? And then fruits sometimes. Also worth out to mention, Blythe Wellness is a sustainable company, and hence we did spend quite a lot of R&D effort in terms of figuring out finding a material for our pod that is eco-friendly. So because there's like a huge criticism of the kind
plastics.
Of industry, exactly, or metal, aluminum, you know, in the industry, you know, they go to landfill, like very few of them actually get recycled, and that's causing a huge problem for the environment. We actually found a plant-derived material that can withstand high temperature and pressure, But at the same time, when users finish burying them, you know, they can just throw it in the bin. If they go to landfill, they decompose 100% in 2 years' time. So it's really a beautiful balance between convenience and eco-friendliness. So there's a lid on the top here. I can just drop the pot, close the lid. So either I can press to start, or I can actually use the app to control my brewing setting. So we can control things like temperature, water amounts, as well as infusion time, the blooming time that I just mentioned, to control the strength. And then once the press is connected by Wi-Fi, and then it starts brewing. The process takes around like 40 to 60 seconds, depending on your setting. But it's a really, really quick and clean and convenient way for our users to achieve their daily wellness.
That is awesome, man. Two quick questions, because we do have another guest in studio ready to come in here in just a second. Number one, what is the price for the system and per unit? You know, like per flavor, all that kind of stuff. And where can people get it? Where can I go get one?
Awesome. Thanks for your support. the brewer is $299, and then we do give out some herbal dips as freebies. And then later on, each of the serving actually costs just $1, $1. And you get like a nice big cup of actual raw and healthy wellness tonic. We do have some premium blends, like for example, blends that are infused with CBD or collagen for like stay-home beauty. And those, you know, depending on the ingredients, the price go up from there.
That is fantastic. And I can see right now, just in the time that we've been talking, you've got a cup of tea right there.
It's done already.
That's fantastic, man. And that is it, just by the looks of it, with the nice clear. I like the fact that it's got the clear carafe, because you really do want to be able to see, A, the clarity of the liquid, and B, the density of the liquid. That is exactly so important when you're talking about medical herbal teas. If it looks like water, literally put that liquid back in the thing and brew the same liquid back through it. That's the only way you can make it stronger, is to rebrew it. So the fact that that comes out that strong out of one disc, and that looks like it'd be about two cups out of each out of each one. So that's pretty cost effective. That's about 50 cents a cup. That's fantastic for herbal tea.
Exactly. So,
once again, tell everybody where they can go to get their lifey wellness.
You can go to our website, us.lifeywellness.com, to check out our products. And then right now we're shipping internationally, and hopefully by first half of this year, we'll be distributing locally via retailers as well.
Great. That is awesome. I'll definitely be in touch to get my lifey. So thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of the digital CES experience. Ryan back with us, who was in the studio a minute ago, had a little bit of a technical hiccup with him. But is Ryan back? Is that the case?
Yes.
Hello. Hi. Hello, Ryan. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm just having the start of my day. And thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure.
Oh, yeah, no worries at all. Thank you so much for taking the time. We know that there can always be, I mean, that's just the world of tech, that you may have issues in this day and age, you know? Tell us a little bit about you, the company, and your product. What are you guys all about?
Yeah, I am the public relations liaison for the Zhiyun Tech Company. We are a global camera gimbal manufacturer, and we've been providing gimbal services for camera operators, photographers, directors all around the world for 5 years. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, I know whenever I saw y'all pop up on my prep screen earlier,
okay,
like, this is fantastic. I want to talk to these guys because I am in the world of AV production. And gimbal technology has come leaps and bounds just literally in the last 2 years. The control that you can have on mobile gimbals, things like that. Tell us a little bit about your gimbals, the accuracy, and the technology behind them.
Oh, yeah, we basically focus on improving the motor power of our gimbals to be able to be compatible with bigger cameras. Like this year, last year we launched a new product named the Crane 3S. It is the only film camera gimbal in the market that is able to be compatible with BMPCC 4K or 6K and even RED camera for a really professional filmmaking scenario. So motor power is the most important thing for the stability of a gimbal. And also we have our own special algorithm, which is to improve our smooth accuracy for the product. Yeah.
Wow. And how are your gimbals controlled? Is it proprietary computer controls built in? Is it via Wi-Fi with a app? How do you go about controlling your gimbals?
Yeah, we control our gimbal by the connecting the camera to the gimbal with cables. We produce different cables, and we established an agreement with this different kind of brands of camera, such as Sony and Panasonic, and for other transmitter image transmission, we use Wi-Fi so you can have a monitor to see the scenery you are doing right now. Yeah.
Basically, like HDMI or SDI over Wi-Fi. What you would use in any standard broadcast television production for short range without wires. That way, wires don't get crimped. It almost works just like my boom arm right here, folks. There's moving joints and all that. And if you have wires in that, eventually those wires are going to flex so much that the cable starts to break. So, or fray, or you start losing data speed just because of how worn the copper itself is in that spot.
Yes.
So, and let's go a little bit into the wireless technology that you guys are using for camera feed, all that kind of stuff. When did y'all start to develop that? And what kind of latency are you looking at between camera and daily viewing monitor, all that kind of stuff?
Yes, we actually started this kind of technology since the beginning of our company because you need a monitor once you use this gimbal.
Yep.
So that's like 4 or 5 years ago, I think. And for the latency, we have reduced the latency to 0.4 seconds. Yeah.
Wow.
We are still upgrading the latency to make it perfect. We have now the second version of our transmount image transmission transmitter, which is has greater performance in the latency, and we are going to improve this in this year. And I think this will absolutely excite our consumers. Yeah,
and I mean the latency that you have there is stupendous. That's absolutely amazing, especially for Wi-Fi. To know that your latency is that low, like the only way you could get it any lower is with a physical connection through fiber or something like that. Like that is absolutely phenomenal. So what kind of price point are we looking at for? Do you have scalable models? Is it mainly for the broadcast professional video, movie market, or are there prosumer versions available out there for your short filmmakers or your run and gun guys like me out there producing commercials locally, that kind of thing?
You mean the price point for this kind of image transmitter?
Yeah, well, I mean, for your product itself, do you have a scalable price range? Are there more than one model available? You know, is there stuff available for the prosumer market, or is it only for the professional market?
Actually, we have different range for different okay. needs. And for the professional level, we have Crane 3S and Crane 2S, which is above $400.
Wow.
And, yeah, that's, we deliver the service and we invest a lot of technology and innovation. And yeah, and also for consumer level, we have WeBS, which is for travel blog lovers, and it is about $100 to $200. And as for general public and audience, we have Smooth X and Smooth Access, or Smooth 4 and Smooth Q 2 for the game, for the cell phone gimbal. It is the top is $100.
Wow, that is a fantastic price point to enter into the gimbal game and to start really learning how to leverage that technology in the content that you create. If you're an on the go blogger, podcaster like I am, even because one of the big things I get asked, especially with my podcast companies, stuff like that, is gear recommendations. Like, hey, I'm looking to start up a travel podcast and I want to start producing YouTube content. Well, great. Of course, you don't have a camera person with you that you're going to take to Belize, you know, and pay for an extra room. It's going to be you with your cell phone at the end of a stick. Is it going to be jumpy, movie, jostly, all that kind of stuff? So to know that you guys are putting technology out there to put gimbals into people's hands in the price range of $100, less than $200, for prosumer grade cell phone gimbals, that kind of stuff, absolutely phenomenal. Phenomenal to know about. Let everybody know where they can go to get their gimbal, where they can go to find out more about you guys and your products.
Yeah, actually, we have a lot of channels around the world. You can go to a local distributor. You can find it on Amazon, Jimin Tech main page, or Best Buy, or bnhvideo.com. Yeah, and for more, we also have a official online store, Zhiyun. In store in our official website, chi-yun.com.
All right, fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time to come back despite the technical issues, Ryan.
Thank you.
I am excited. I would like to have y'all on my podcast to do a whole episode to talk about this stuff, because it's amazing where the gimbal market has gone over the last few years, the technology that has come out. And the things that are available, like you guys out there. So thanks so much for coming back.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I'm going to turn you over to our producers now as I welcome our next guest, Igor Tuttleman, CEO and founder of Rithitire. Tell us a little bit about this. I myself come from a family of tire salesmen. My dad was a huge territory tire manager for Cooper Tire and Rubber Company here in the Texas Southwest area, all that kind of stuff. So, tires are in my blood. The phrase my dad used my whole life was, the life of your car rides on an eighth of an inch of rubber. Tires. It's like not taking care of your feet, people. When you don't take care of your feet, you end up with ankle problems, knee problems, hip problems, back problems. Same thing with your tires. So to have somebody here talking about airless tires, things that eliminate flats, things that eliminate wear and tear on your vehicle, I'm all about it. tell us what you're all about here, Igor.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on here. So I'll give you the shorthand. So at Rithitire, what we're doing is we're developing airless tires that eliminate flats without sacrificing performance. So I had the opportunity to participate in a program with FedTech and NASA a few months ago, where I was shown a lot of different technologies that NASA has been working on. And through this exposure, I identified that their super elastic tire technology is just fascinating. It's like taking, you know, if, and I've got one here. So it's like taking this really special alloy that's, you know, elastic like rubber and strong like titanium and making an exoskeleton of it for tires, right? And what that does is it gives it these unique properties where it can withstand all different types of terrain, all different types of climates, and it does that while being an airless tire. So this is fascinating technology. I spent several months doing research on it. Eventually we got a license from NASA and we're developing our own intellectual property as well. And we've just been, you know, pushing forward because I think that this has an incredible amount of potential for, you know, changing the way that we view tires, changing the way that we view vehicles altogether.
Yeah. Well, especially whenever you're talking, and if you could hold that up one more time, for the audience to see, because yeah, if you start looking at, especially the way that the coils are put together, you really start looking at almost a geodesic, almost Buckminster Fuller type structure.
Exactly.
In the way that they flex, compress, expand freely, things like that. And it's really cool. Now, let's dispel a little myth here, because you know, back in the early days of tires, folks, if you ever see all the old movies where they walk up to the car and they're like, let's see if this thing's worth its salt, and they kick it, that's to see if it had radial tires or pneumatic tires. Like, they had solid rubber tires at one point, and they found out that they were just horrible for vehicles. They like, you felt everything in the road. They use them still for like extreme earth moving, that kind of stuff, because there's no way you're going to avoid a blowout typically, carrying the extra weight of on top of the vehicle when you're moving 18 trees of lumber as well. But this technology seems really interesting to put inside. Now, is there like a rubber housing that goes around that? And that is the exoskeleton, or I guess endoskeleton at this point, that would live inside the rubber housing, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to look exactly like a traditional tire. And the way traditional tires are made nowadays is that they have steel plies running through it so that, you know, it holds all the rubber together and keeps the air pressure in. So this builds a more rigid system that can still accept this type of compression that comes along with, you know, riding over a pothole or going off road.
Well, and some people may have experienced the odd wear and tear, especially that happens if you don't keep up with the alignment on your vehicle, where the tire or the balance on your tires, where they start doing this, then you get a little blister, and that blister actually causes it to unzip along the radial belt line, because pressure builds up along the radius of the radials, and it causes it to peel up just like a peel off of an orange is what it looks like. And that destroys the side of your, I had it happen to a car that I had at one point. And when you're talking about that, yeah, that's quite literally because of air pressure inside of it. The way that that reacts to the temperature of the road and the speed that you're operating and everything else. These though are a little, and a lot of people might say like, oh, you know, president's got run flat tires on the, on his vehicle, you know. Explain to us the difference between that style of a run flat tire, and what you have here.
Yeah. So the statistics behind run flats are pretty shocking. A lot of higher end vehicles come with run flats, but the proportion of people that actually replace them with another run flat is very low. Yeah. And that's because one of the biggest problems with run flats is their cost. Apart from the cost, you know, is realistically a thicker tread. It can withstand a pop per se. It'll take you from, you know, point A to point B if it's in its worst condition. But decreased performance, you know, to save you maybe once or twice and come at such a high cost point, that's just difficult to justify. So what we're trying to do, what we are doing is, by having this endoskeleton, as you said, this makes it so that, you know, the tire will react to the road. It's not going to be, you know, even if it gets punctured, there's nothing to let out. And so it definitely, it's more of like a reactive tire as opposed to one that's, you know, very, you know, pardon the analogy, but it's square, right? It's supposed to just move around, and that's about it. It's not supposed to work with the environment.
No, absolutely not. It is, and it's basically just that. It's, I mean, imagine having like a piece of basically like railroad tie wrapped in a circle inside of your tire. That's what's there. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of extra weight for your vehicle to move. It's going to cause more wear and tear on your drivetrain in order to have it. It's not going to be a comfortable, smooth ride all the time. You know, like you hit a pothole, oh, you're going to feel that pothole with every inch of that heavy, heavy run flat. You're going to feel that pothole. Whereas this, if you could hold it up again, you can see where with that intercoiled spring design, it would actively flex the way that a tire full of air would. So, really, really phenomenal. What are you still in the development phase right now? Is this something that you're trying to standardize into the world of existing tires, where basically this would be an add-on to your vehicle that any BF Goodrich or Firestone or a little shout out to Pop's old company, Cooper Tire, any of those that you would find at your standard auto dealer, or not auto dealer, but auto shop, you know, that it would just fit inside of a standard, whatever your tire size is, 185, 1023, or what have you.
You know, that's definitely the goal down the road. One of the issues is that the industry has a lot of red tape in it. It does. So for us to get into, for example, a really good market to get a, you know, airless high performing tire into is trucking. You know, a single truck driver loses, I think it's around $28,000 a year in productivity due to flat tires.
Yep.
And so for us to get into trucking, realistically, it's a 7 to 8 year timeline, just because there's so much red tape and there's so much certification and compliance that needs to happen there. So what we're doing in the meantime is we're focusing on, you know, smaller niche markets where we still think that we're going to be able to really improve and change the status quo. So for example, mountain biking, mountain biking is an industry where, you know, every single part of your bike to this point has been upgraded where it's lightweight, it's virtually indestructible, it's safe, you know, but you can still get a flat tire at the end of the day. So that's one of our first targets. It's developing a mountain bike tire that, you know, won't go flat and won't give you all the headaches of, you know, goo tires or foam tires that don't feel like you're on a bike.
In addition to that, just to kind of go along kind of the same kind of market, if you started looking into like home tractor market, things like that, you know, like riding lawnmowers, that kind of stuff, where, if you go out and get a flat tire on a riding lawnmower, you still got to change it. You still got to change a tire. It still holds air. It's got a tube, you know, things like that, where you have a very, what would be a much easier barrier of entry to the market, like you're saying, where, when it comes to the trucking infrastructure in this country or any country, because of the fact that it is such a vital part of the infrastructure, there is a lot of safety protocol. Like, you may as well be trying to make a medical device, like quite literally with the safety protocols that you have to go through to get something into the trucking or automotive industry in America. I mean, prime example, look at what happened to Toyota sales whenever like foot mats started slipping around. I bought my Toyota. It didn't even come with foot mats. That's how far it went. So that's the kind of safety protocols that you're looking at. Like, if they get rid of floor mats, imagine what they would do if something went wrong. But what kind of release timeline are you looking at right now?
Yeah, so we're working on our mountain bike release, which we're planning for somewhere around the third quarter of 2021. Great. So just around August, September. That's awesome. Our plan for that. In the meantime, we're seeking federal funding. We're
Great.
You know, doing competitions, applying for stuff, all the startup jazz, nice. And continuing R&D, obviously.
Well, congratulations. Such an amazing forward-looking idea, especially as we get into the world of automated vehicles, things like that. You know, like, hey, how's an automated vehicle going to deal with a blowout?
This is enabling.
It's hard enough to control your vehicle with human reflexes when there's a blowout, you know?
Yeah.
Considering things like that, absolutely. I think you have a fantastic future market ahead of you with this technology. Good luck. Yep. Thank you so much for your appearance today, and enjoy the rest of your digital CES.
Thanks, Chris. Have a good one.
Absolutely. Our next guest, someone who has been on before, I'm excited to get to interview them. Sturm Pinball, welcome, Zach Sharp. How are you? Oh, you're not Zach Sharp, are you?
No, that was not, but I am Zach Sharp.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm good. That was a good, like, quick wake-up call for me. So thank you. You're keeping me on my toes.
Absolutely. Well, welcome back. I myself am somebody who has been a fan of you guys' work my entire life. I am an analog freak, and pinball machines are just my jam. I love pinball machines. It's hard for me not to just, like, dump my quarters in them whenever I see them somewhere. So tell us a little bit about, for those who may not be familiar, a quick synopsis of Sturm Pinball and what you guys have going on right now. Some of the exciting things that y'all have coming out.
Sure. So we've been in business for over 30 years. We are the world leader in manufacturing, designing, and producing pinball machines. We've had a very successful year. We've released Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Stranger Things, Avengers, and what we just released last month. And is it okay if I share my screen quickly?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
All right.
We should have the screen share enabled for you.
Okay. Can you see this right now?
Producers? Okay, I hear a no from our producers as of right now.
Maybe this will work.
There we go.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Now, just imagine Immigrant Song playing in the background. We're muting it for now just because, you know.
My God.
It's very tight with her.
The side graphics are so beautiful. Oh, man. Oh, dude.
I don't know if you'll get flagged with my singing, but.
Come from the land of the ice and snow. Dude, that's epic. That is so cool, man. Now,
Just wait. This is the premium model.
Yeah, because not a lot of people realize that though you may have a favorite video machine from or favorite pinball machine from Stern, that there are different models available with many of them.
Yep. So I'll touch on that in a second. Let me stop sharing.
Dude, that's so cool.
Yeah, we had to mute that, but, you know, go to sternpinball.com. You can watch the trailer with full sound. We've got the rights to Immigrant Song in our marketing video. But that is our latest, newest, greatest machine, Led Zeppelin. And that's if you are a fan of pinball, if you're a fan of rock music or any music, this is your jam. I mean, it's the best energy of its kind, pinball music. So. Yeah. With all of our cornerstone titles, we've got a pro, a premium, and limited edition model. So the pro is what you would typically see on, you know, locations, bar arcades. And then the premium and limited edition is what you would see more for your home.
Okay. And what is the difference between those step models?
Sure. So the pro model has a few less moving parts. So for this game, for Led Zeppelin, the premium has an extra ramp, And then you saw it in the video. It's called the Electric Magic Device, where this device literally raises up out of the playfield, and it showcases a spinner that you can just rip, and it spins and it charges a magnet. So once you hit this certain threshold in the game, the ball will magically stop and it'll go back down in the playfield. So it will just disappear. Cool. You don't know where the ball is, when it's going to pop back out, and it can act as a captive ball. You know, you can shoot it through. The magnet can throw the ball at you up the playfield. So it's magical. That's why it's called the Electric Magic Device. And then also on the premium and LE models, we have our new expression lighting system. So if you saw on the inside of the cabinets, there's these 96 intelligent RGB LEDs, and it helps, you know, simulate a graphic equalizer that, you know, changes color, beats to the music. It's just fully choreographed to all the songs that we have in the game, full length Led Zeppelin songs that we have approved and worked with the licensor. I'll say Led Zeppelin does not give away their license to anyone. Gary Stern has been with this company, I mean, his whole life. Stern has been in business for a little over 30 years. It's taken a little over 30 years to get this game made.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean they are a slow roll boil when it comes to giving their rights away and letting it happen. I think there was like a car commercial a while back. I think it may have been it might have been Immigrant's Song that was used in it. But I think that it's one of those that the fact that y'all got that is absolutely amazing, because of course most people might be familiar with like the Kiss pinball machine, you know, that kind of, there have been of course other rock and roll themed pinball machines, that the Aerosmith had one.
Yep. Metallica, AC/DC,
Metallica, yeah, yeah, Beatles. So I mean, you guys have been cooperating. I did not know that there was an Eagles pinball machine.
not that I've heard of. That's news to me.
Oh okay, I thought you just said the Eagles. That's why I was like, whoa.
Oh no, sorry, the Beatles.
That's okay. The Beatles. Okay, yeah. That one makes a whole lot more sense. But, you know, what is it like for you guys to pick up relationships like that and to carry those on through the years? Because that really is something, I think, at least as a rock and roll fan at heart, like I'm a Rush freak. For instance, and whenever you went to a Rush show, you can't anymore, but whenever you did, you saw generations of Rush heads. You saw like the granddad who was into it back in 68, who got the kid into it, who got his son into it. Like me and my brother always went with my nephews, you know. So I think that pinball is very much in that same way, that cross-generational dads that play pinball bring their kids out to play pinball.
Absolutely. That kind of and stuff. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about pinball is you can convert new fans. So, I mean, I'm a perfect example of it. We released Iron Maiden a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I could not name one Iron Maiden song. I have that game in my basement and I love their music. I mean, it's perfect with pinball, but I mean, you can say the same with all these newer properties. So, you know, Stranger Things, you have a lot of adults that might not watch it, but, you know, there's teenagers and kids that watch it and get their parents into it. So it's really cool just to see how, you know, pinball bridges the gaps all across the world.
Well, and I
like
think
to say pinball is the universal language of fun.
It is. It is. It really is. Because no matter where you go in the world, there are versions of pinball machines.
Yeah.
There's the localized version of what one is even. And it even goes back to like gaming here in America, back to the days of gambling and getting prizes instead of money, all kinds of stuff. And one of the things that I love about pinball machines is the marriage between analog and digital. The fact that even though y'all keep things as analog as possible, hand wiring, all that kind of just beautiful construction on the inside, when you open them, they look like a piece of art on the inside. They are like, as a circuit designer, they are just so gorgeous. Like it is just beautifully attractive to open up a pinball machine.
It blows my mind.
Some of the technology that you guys incorporate and marry with the analog, is so amazing. If you can go into some of that just a little bit real quick for our audience.
Sure. So, I mean, we just keep evolving as the technology changes. So, I mean, you go back 10, 15 years and all of the lighting in the game used to be incandescent bulbs, which, you know, at the time was fine. But now you improve technologies and you've got LEDs. Not only do they last longer, so you're not changing out your light bulbs. You know, if you go to an arcade and they have an old pinball machine, there's a good chance that you see some of the light bulbs out. And yeah. you won't see that happen on these newer games. But, you know, going a step further, you know, we're consistently trying to improve our products. We want to make them as reliable as possible. Now, you've got a metal ball that is just transporting and hitting things all around the machine. So inevitably you want to take care of it and maintain it. It's, you know, it's like your car. You can't just let your car just drive forever. And yeah. with the pinball machine, we want to make these things as bulletproof and reliable as possible. So with our new Spike 2 technology, it helps to, you know, reduce the complexities underneath the hood, so to speak. So you were saying when you open up a machine and you see all of these wires, you know, there's still a lot of wires, yeah. but you know, 10 years ago, it was a mile of wire. And now we're down to, you know, half a mile of wire. So, I mean, oh, wow. it's pretty much more, you know, reduced complexity, less components to break, and, you know, easy serviceability. You know, by and large, these machines are meant to be coin operated. So you want plug and play for, you know, operators to make money. But for a homeowner, you also want serviceability to be easy. If it's, you know, a simple swap of a board, if something goes out, that's much easier than telling, you know, some casual person, hey, can you bust out the soldering iron and try to do something? It's like,
so we're going to ship you the transformer. Yeah. And what you need to do is discharge the capacitors first, you know, so you don't get hurt. And yeah, precisely. So, yeah, if you can make it all component wise to where it's like, hey, hit this button on the back, it'll release the latch. You can open it up, one screwdriver, pop out the board, pop in the new one, connect the wires, you're back in business.
Yeah, or you run through a diagnostic test and it tells you, you know, exactly, you know, oh, node board 8 is out. And it's like, okay, now I know where to look. Versus the wild west of the old games where it's like, all right, let me bust out my multimeter and just kind of hope and pray and prod around.
Let's hope that whoever the technician is that's working on it is really, really good at it.
Yeah.
So that they can test that special ramp, you know. This is just fantastic. I love the fact that I got to interview you and dork out on this for a minute or two. Tell everybody where they can go to get their new version of the Led Zeppelin Immigrant Song pinball machine.
There's more than Immigrant Song. There's 10 full-length tracks.
Dude,
you know, awesome. I could keep rambling on. You know, I don't want a communication breakdown here, but you can go to sternpinball.com, and if you find a dealer or distributor, you can find, you know, one to buy for your home, or as arcades slowly start to get back open, you know, safely and responsibly. We also have a pinball locator, so you can play these games out in the wild.
Oh, fantastic. That's awesome. I may have to. Where can you get the pinball locator? Is that just on your general app store?
If you go to sternpinball.com, it's on the upper like red bar of our website. It says pinball locator.
Cool. I am definitely getting that for my travel device for once I get back out into the world of traveling AV. Thank you so much for taking the time, as always, to come by, talk about the latest and greatest over there at Stern.
Thank you for having me on. And, you know, next year, come by the booth and we'll play a game.
Absolutely. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your digital CES.
Thanks. You too.
All right. Oh, dude, too cool. Like I said, big, big analog fan. So I love things like that. We got a couple people left in this wrapping up of our digital 2021 CES coverage. Right now, we have Shiguru Miyake from Quantum Operation Inc. Tell us a little bit about what you guys do over there.
Hi, how are you, Chris?
Hey.
Yeah, I'm from Japan, yeah, and it's like 9:30 now, so it's small. Oh. But we are Quantum Operation, and we are the IoT startup and based in Japan, and we have we are creating these wearable devices, you can see it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sorry, it's in Japanese, but so you can measure like temperature, steps, heart rate, blood pressure, and SpO2.
Oh, wow.
And this is a breathing rate. And we are here at CES to because we innovated a non-invasive blood glucose sensors, yeah, which is not having gone out from to the world. It will be the world's first blood glucose sensor as a non-invasive, yeah. So we innovated this, and that's why we are here for the CES.
And but now, that's really interesting technology. I know quite a few people who have to regularly prick their finger, things like that, to get their blood glucose. I don't want you to get too proprietary in your technology. Mm-hmm. But that's pretty revolutionary to have a non-invasive blood glucose measurement. Is that done via CO2 level? How are you guys going about getting that data?
Can I see a slide for that? Wait a moment. So it's like you can see it there, and it's pretty simple. Like you emit the light into your blood, and like you get a light back from the blood. Yeah, you reflected it, and the light is like have a certain wavelength, which can be absorbed by like blood glucose, yeah.
Okay.
So absorbed light comes back from this blood. So there's a difference between these two lights and either absorbed by blood glucose or not. So we somehow calculate in the firm way, yeah. And we get a number of blood glucose. That's a system, yeah.
And how accurate is this measurement system right now? Is this something that y'all have just now launching out on the market? Is it currently available, coming available?
To be honest, we just created a prototype, yeah.
Okay.
And we have good result with the in-house test, but we have to go into the clinical trial in Japan.
Sure.
And we are planning to do that in a few months, yeah. So it will be like several trials we have to do, and it's going to take few more years, but yeah, we are hoping to get good result with it, yeah.
Yeah, and especially being able to put it into a wearable really kind of brings it into the pre-existing market, you know, mm-hmm. where as long as whatever wearable you have has the proprietary sensors in order to do this, mm-hmm. or, you know, matching sensors would be able to do it. So is this proprietary to your system? Is it something that could be married with other existing technology? Is that a route that you guys are looking at presently?
So it can be connected with like applications, yeah, like this.
Okay.
On the smartphones, and these data can be like connected with say like IoT electricity devices. So it can do something like new, yeah. I don't know, like connect with like TVs and like music, and you get a feeling from the vitals, and you just put on the electricity, put on like classic music for their feelings, yeah? Which is get from the vitals. It can be done, but it's like pretty new technology, so we have to make a methodology for that, but it's a kind of dream,
and I mean that's just it. With this technology coming about, and like you said, already going to medical trial there in Japan, which of course, like any good country, Japan has, you know, you got to pass a few rounds of medical trials, that kind of stuff. I know American FDA is like out of control with some of that stuff. But what is your expected to market right now?
Sorry?
What is your expected to market date right now? Do y'all have a projection of like a year and a half before things are available on market in Japan or something like that?
So for these wearable devices, it's like a difference between like medical usage and healthcare usage, which means for wellness things. Yeah. So for wellness things, it's gonna be take like shorter time to go out to the market, and we are hoping to provide to you guys in within a year or year or more. So yes, that's what we are aiming. But
that is fantastic.
And on the other hand, like for medical things, as I said, like you have to do like several trials for that.
So it's gonna
take more years, but.
Of course. I mean, if it's going to tell you like what your dosage of insulin should be, it's going to be a totally different realm of product and testing and everything else than something that just says this is your known blood sugar level.
So for wellness, it can be like going to like exercising and something like that, which is kind of less the exactness of
less stringent process and a little bit less controlled.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you aren't giving that medical advice of dosage, anything like that.
So it might be able to with like tendency and not the exact number. We are looking for both.
This is really fantastic to know that this kind of stuff is coming out on market, that you guys. It's so close to release because there are so many people worldwide that need a product like this. So many people that would love to get the help that they need, but sometimes that fear of a needle just keeps them from getting it, you know?
Yes, that's true. That's why we are here, I see these children with type 1 diabetes, and we have, as you said, they have to like stick the needle into
it. Yeah, you gotta be comfortable with somebody coming at you with a needle a couple times a day.
Yes, and like it's like 20 times a day, every year or whole of their lives. That's why we are here to help these children or people suffering with diabetes.
Well, Shiguru, thank you so much for your time. Yeah. This is so amazing. Tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Quantum Operation Inc., where they can go to help fund you guys, to help you guys do research, whatever.
I've got a little paper here.
I love it. There you go. Up a little bit higher.
LinkedIn, my name's Guru Miyake, and you might search for Quantum Operation, and this is our website address. So,
all right.
Fantastic.
Well, once again, thank you so much for taking the time out here, closing out our broadcast for CES 2021. We have a couple more people in the studio. Thank you so much once again, Shiguru, for your time.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, bye.
All right. Next we have RoboSense coming in to talk about smart LiDAR sensing systems with Casey Gong. Hello, Casey. How are you today?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. I'm sitting here for the past 3 days getting to just listen to mass amounts of technology. It's like getting to just go through like 28 magazines at the same time. It's great.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is that
that's impressive.
More input moment, you know. Speaking of which, tell us a little bit about your smart LiDAR systems that you guys are working on over at RoboSense.
So first of all, I would like to shortly introduce ourselves a little bit. Founded in 2014, we are the leading provider of smart LiDAR sensor system, incorporating LiDAR sensors, AI algorithms, and IC chipsets. That transforms conventional 3D LiDAR sensor to full data analysis and comprehension systems. So actually this year at Digital CES 2021, we also announced our SOP version of the automotive grade high performance solid state LiDAR. which is also the world's first mass production ready solid state automotive LiDAR.
Wow. Wow. That is fantastic. Because, I mean, now explain to people who may not know the difference here. What is so special about solid state LiDAR?
Okay. So unlike the traditional mechanical LiDAR, our solid state LiDAR uses the MEMS technology. So why do we use this technology? Because we the industry need to achieve a large scale commercialization of autonomous vehicle. Yeah. So a new generation of high precision 3D environment sensing solid state LiDAR technologies will be the perfect fit to fulfill the industry's requirements, including the need for automotive grade and mass production, high resolution and high reliability and low cost. And the MEMS technology has been long used in the projectors and also by Texas Instruments for a long time. So therefore, it is very mature in terms of production, cost and performance.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're talking about something like you're saying that is hard built, it's different than something that functions fully off of software. And the fact that it has this hardwired capability to recognize certain objects, that kind of stuff really does speed up that processing that it takes to recognize certain things. Like you're saying, a static object like a light pole as opposed to a person standing next to the light pole, that kind of stuff.
Yes. Yes, because pure point cloud outputs from a single LiDAR hardware is meaningless for autonomous vehicles. The AI perception algorithm we provide can semantically segment and detect the obstacles from the point clouds, so that further to recognize the types of obstacles. For example, so it can recognize whether you are in a car or a truck or just a people or dog, so something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. So, with the Integrity AI perception algorithm, so it can greatly reduce the performance and also the cost requirements for the domain controller within the vehicle.
And you guys, like you said, are focused mainly in the autonomous vehicle market. That's mainly what you guys are focusing your technology toward, correct?
We do provide solid state LiDARs for OEM and for the autonomous cars, but we also provide mechanical LiDARs for robots and also robo truck, robo taxi.
All right,
and also V2R.
Getting to be more and more common now. I know where this event normally happens. In Las Vegas, that is one of the cities where you can go if you have a Lyft. They have autonomous Lyft and stuff like that. So it is
also
really
Waymo
becoming
is
more. And it's really becoming a lot more common to see that. So to know that there are companies like you out there working on these hardwired solutions in the box, ready to go. I assume that like you're saying, most of this is going to be in the B2B market, business to business. You aren't necessarily going to see a whole lot of onto Amazon,
and
hop onto Amazon and buy one for your home. if you're out there making Arduino kits, you know, maybe something like that. What is the entry point that you're looking at for an item such as the system that you're talking about?
Sorry, are you asking?
The availability and pricing of your product.
Okay. Yes. So we expect the price of LiDAR can be reduced to $700 to $800. Per one, so that it can be used on every autonomous car in the near future. So, and also we think that it's a need for every car to put on a LiDAR, because the most important criteria for autonomous vehicle is safety. So to ensure the safety drive, a completely safe perception of the surrounding environment is the first step. but LiDAR can make up the weaknesses of camera and radar system. So it is very necessary for every autonomous driving cars to use LiDAR.
Yeah, and I think that that's a lot of where things really have to start moving toward. We've seen a lot of the stereoscopic cameras, optical cameras, things like that. But until we start moving into that world of full-on use of LiDAR on the daily, that kind of thing, and the same similar kind of mapping technologies that can be done with, like you were saying, point cloud management, that kind of thing, really phenomenal stuff. So the fact that you guys are on the kind of the tip of the spear, so to speak, when it comes to this kind of stuff, it's great to see new innovations coming out in this realm.
Yes, it's getting more and more popular, especially for LiDAR in terms of autonomous driving, the overall industry. And actually, we have already delivered in batches in December last year to a North American OEM, but due to the confidentiality, I cannot disclose the name. But you might see the car in the, I think it's in the March this year.
Okay. And it's fantastic, like I said, to know that there are companies like you out there spearheading this technology and already putting it into vehicles, already getting it licensed out there. So congratulations. Great for you guys. Tell everybody where they can go to find out more about RoboSense, if they are a product designer, anything like that, where they can go to find out more about utilizing your technology.
Well, for everyone who wants to know more about RoboSense, so please go to robosense.ai.com to learn more about us. And also, you may find us in the CES homepage, the exhibitor directory.
All right. Thank you very much. Fantastic. Thank you so much for the time during a very busy digital CES 2021. Take care. We hope to see you at a booth next year.
Have a nice day. Thank you so much.
All right. You too. We have just a couple more interviews. Man, the time flies by so fast. You know, like I'm used to having an interview or two in my show maybe, but man, when you're talking 10 minutes an interview, it's hard not to just get carried away with some of this exciting technology. Here we are right now coming up into our last few minutes. Our next guest is already dialed up. Sir Stefan Oostendorp, how are you doing today? Tell us a little bit about ice staging and the VR-AR content creation technology y'all are working on.
Yes. Hey, how are you? Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, absolutely. Not often that we get to talk to a sir.
So my name is Fawn, and I'm with ice staging. I'm the business development manager of iStaging, and like you said, we are an augmented and virtual reality company, but mainly we enable people to create, build, host, and ultimately share virtual experiences really quickly and really easily. And so you can imagine if you are trying to actually do a virtual exhibition, if you have a retail store that you want to put online and enable people to visualize and visit. If you are a realtor and you want to sell a property, if you're a university and you want to host a virtual open day, all of that stuff is possible with our platform. And I think one of the exciting things this year with CES is that we're not only an exhibitor, but we're actually a Taiwanese company. So for the Taiwan companies that are joining CES virtually this year, we're also a provider. So they're actually also creating virtual booths.
Themselves. Fantastic.
So, yeah.
It is so good because I myself am a professional AV technician in the conference realm. So typically I would be in Vegas doing this and then the next week on the exact same property building a show for SAP, you know? And that's what I did, was travel around the country and put on events, things like that. And to see the way that things like Real Engine are being leveraged, Second Life, that kind of stuff. Technologies that people had almost kind of forgotten about.
Yeah.
Where it was like they came along and it was like, cool, what the heck are we going to do with that, dude?
Yeah, exactly.
Now it's one of those like, yeah, I've got my own Azure camera over here. When COVID started, me and a buddy started looking at making digital avatars for people to do fully digital conferences.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of stuff where, yeah, you have a keynote, but that keynote person is a digital avatar. You're in a digital environment that you've created.
That's
that
right.
Kind of stuff. So the fact that y'all are looking into this is fantastic and phenomenal. Yeah. Tell us a little bit more, because, of course, with this technology and with this concept comes a crazed field of customization. That would have to be able to exist, correct?
Yeah, you think so. The interesting thing is that what we wanted to do is, instead of us creating all of this content and doing all that customization ourselves for people that want to do this, we said, okay, we just need to have a platform so that we empower people to do all of this work and give the control back to them so that they can build it themselves. So we're essentially providing the platform. And then, they can upload their own content and edit all of their own stuff. If we're talking about a virtual exhibition here, say, okay, I have my booth and now I want to add all of my visuals. So my videos, my information regarding my products, audio services, 360 models, 3D models, whatever you could possibly think of, websites, all put it in there. But instead of us doing it, say, okay, that's also not very efficient. What if we have, like in the case of CES, you have thousands of companies. We can't all do that, So all of those companies are basically, they have a subscription or an account to our platform, and they can do all of that work themselves. Now, there are essentially two ways to create the content initially. So you have, number one would be you can actually capture physical spaces and upload those. Right? But you can also have 3D rendered content. And that obviously requires a little bit more manual work and more customization. Yeah. But to sort of speed up that process, what we've done is we've got a database of tons of sort of templates that people can choose from. Because it's difficult when companies go, okay, I want, I have something in mind, but the communication of that back and forth is time consuming. So you have a bunch of templates. Okay, I like that particular template for, an entrance, and I like that for an exhibition hall, and I like that for,
This is our breakout room look. This is our GM look. That kind of stuff where the person can, almost digitally walk themselves down the hallway of the facility to the next thing and maybe even experience something strange along the way. At that point, that's where some customization comes in, and you can have Easter eggs. You can have treasure hunts in the middle of it to get people in. The same way that they do, like, hey, use your phone, scan the QR code. If you get 25 QR codes first, you win this door prize.
You can
incorporate the same kind of thing into the digital world to make that interactive and kind of cue in that human response.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. Because that's one of the issues, right? All that visual stuff. It's very immersive, but the interactivity, like the interaction with people in the digital world. Totally. I think a lot of companies are still struggling with that, and people are just struggling. Okay, this is cool, but it's just me. It's just me looking at a screen, and there needs to be a little bit more than that. I think there are two steps. You have the visual aspect, first of all, to get people engaged, right? I need to get people to, okay, I'm interested, I want to learn more. And then you have that interaction, say, hey, now I want to talk to someone and I want to be able
to,
like when I'm walking, right, walking through through CES, and so you're standing there at your booth, and someone is sort of lingering, or, you just walk up to them and say, hey, do you want to learn more? Or, we are trying to sort of replicate a similar experience online.
And it's interesting because more than once over the last 2 days, I have used the phrase of you could not get more CES than this CES.
Right. Yes, exactly.
You could not. The fact that everybody now has to equally leverage technology to make CES happen. It's not just a booth fee. It's not just a passport. It's not just an airline ticket and a hotel stay. You now have to know how to leverage the technology in order to get your point across the same way that you did with the press of flesh and a really impressive booth. Most of the time you didn't build. If it's a big booth, you've got people like me who come out, or Freeman Labor, who you ship your stuff to and you give them the dimensions, then they build it and go, that's where you want your screen, right? Okay. See you tomorrow. and they're out. So the fact that you're trying to build in that human press of flesh that happens at an event like CES, where you can even have interaction between attendees, not just between the, like you and I can virtually meet because we're both looking at the same virtual booth and go, wow, that's pretty cool. And then we can go have a virtual cup of coffee and network the same way that we would at CES.
Exactly. Exactly. So let me ask you a question. You've been doing tons of interviews over the last week. What if people, like, what is their thought? Like, what's their experience been? Because this is obviously very new.
The experience has been, I think the overall feel is that it's just not the same. It's just not the same.
Right. Okay.
That's the quote. Yeah, right. Because it's this. And like I said, it took me a mental flip of a switch because it takes somebody a long time to go, you know what I'm done being is a broadcast technician. But now we're all broadcast technicians again in my industry. Yeah. So it's like, let me hop in the Wayback Machine by 10 years and brush off my old Skype gloves, you know. And to see this kind of technology, like I said, being utilized, when my buddy brought it up to me and was like, hey, Chris, this is because some of my friends work in some really advanced fields where, like, they're out doing movie things on the realm of Mandalorian, where they're actively capturing 8 cameras of footage and then syncing that onto 1 pixel LED walls in the background to make it look like a real time background, that kind of stuff. And AR, VR, the things that you're doing. So whenever they came to me with this concept, my noodle just went into overdrive and just started cooking things. And it was, I'll leave a couple things for off air for you, just to sweeten your pot a little bit, things that you may not have considered, that are fields that you could branch into with what you're doing. That are absolutely phenomenal. And just the technology that you guys are using to put this on and to make this happen. Now, real quick, because we are, like, I love the fact that you're my last interview, because this is literally right up my alley.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to have you on my Talking Sound podcast to talk about how this is being leveraged, not even can be. That's what I tried to tell people is, number one, for the last 2 years, I have been investing in nothing but live streaming equipment. That's all that my purchases for gear have been going toward. Yeah. And then this happened. And I was literally hearing from my vendors, I would love to sell a live streaming package, Chris. Nobody wants to spend the money. Nobody wants to spend. And now I guarantee you, you are not having an event without a live stream anymore.
Exactly.
It's not going to happen. Exactly. And when you're talking about how are you going to make that live stream engaging, how are you going to make that live stream stand out from just a Zoom call like this? It's technology like what you guys are leveraging over there that's what's going to do.
Exactly. Well, it's interesting because all those questions, we get those on a daily basis.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Honestly, like, hey, I just don't want people dialing into a Zoom meeting for a freaking breakout room.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. Yeah, that's right. So, like, I mean, go ahead.
No, please.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, and I think a lot of every day when we talk to people, they're a little scared of it. They're skeptical. Yeah. They don't really know. You know, they don't understand. They don't, oh man, this is going to cost me millions of dollars to get to make this happen. It's not. It honestly, I mean, it's possible, yes. Yeah. But you know, we're sort of, we want to get you into it. We want to get you started. We want to enable you to experience it first. So just give this a try, you know?
Well, and I think that that's really where, and that's one of the things that I brought up to my buddy, is what we really need to do is have 10 skins, and that's it.
Yes.
Here's option A for a ballroom. Here's option B. Here's a bigger ballroom. We can marry these two together if you want.
Exactly.
Here's the shape of your ballroom. Whatever colors you want, we can customize that. You exactly. want a basketball hoop over in the right-hand side? We can make that happen.
Exactly.
But here's the walls. Here's the roof. Here's the dimensions. That's the hard part.
And this is the part where people are doing.
Traveling the country to go find the facility that fits the people. And we want to do this. So we need a 30-foot arch. Who's got a 35-foot ceiling?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Things like that.
And we're doing that with the sort of, that's what we're trying to do with this sort of database, right? To give people, here you go. Instead of starting from scratch, you know, in 6 months' time, we're still not there. You know, this is the basis. And then they go, oh, okay, this is interesting. This is what I have in mind. Now customize that for me and change the colors and put my logo there and, you know, make that bigger, make this smaller. Okay, we can do that, you know? And not 3 months from now, you know, next week I'll have a draft ready for you. You know,
Man, to know that you guys have come out, this is just incredible. It's fantastic. I've literally got like two handfuls of companies that I'm going to be directing your way with stuff. Even if it's just to bang heads against walls and see how you can help them out.
And you know, because we're also relatively new. We're not a new company, but the thing has been launched, you know, early last year. So we're also still learning, you know. Okay, all of these companies. Okay, how about this? Maybe we could do this. Can you develop that? You know, what about this experience? Because you know, some of these, obviously, the ones that are now doing this, they're really, really, you know, excited about it, about the possibilities of it, and they want to think with us, right? Like,
Hey, right here, man. Y'all want to hop on a Zoom call and roundtable and just spitball? I'm down. Like I said, I've got like a good three concepts that you could sell as simple pre-production for stuff. Like you wouldn't even have to do the back end if you didn't want to.
Right. Exactly.
So the fact that you guys have come out with a VR AR white label event system.
Yep.
Is amazing. That's like being able to go to somebody that's got a white label website builder and go, here's your five templates. Choose which one you want. Plug and play your data. You know, what do you want for a header? Here's your image, you know? So that's absolutely phenomenal, man. iStaging is the company. Stefan, thank you so much for coming on. I am so excited about this. I'm jazzed. And man, I'm just totally impressed. Tell everybody where they can go to find out more about iStaging.
All right, they can go to iStaging.com to find out more. And you can also connect with me on LinkedIn, and I'd be happy to set up a Zoom call or any conference to chat. So, yes, that's how.
I can guarantee you will be getting a LinkedIn connection from me today, my friend. Because this is just too cool. I am glad to know that I am not the only mad scientist.
Absolutely not. Just as crazy.
Because that's what it takes. That's what it takes. It's only the mad scientists that save us in these situations, folks.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's people that have the out of the box solution that comes out in the longevity of things. So thank you once again for the time with iStaging and everything else, Stefan.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Man, dude, I'm telling you, just some of the technology that comes across on the show during CES is mind-blowing. And, you know, as the host of the Talking Sound podcast, as someone who is involved hip deep in the world of event technology, projection, sound systems, Wi-Fi, all that kind of stuff, man, what those guys are doing over at iStaging is the future of the events industry. It really is. Anybody that's not incorporating these things into their event within the next 3 to 5 years, you will be like at like the podunk drive-in motel down the road with your event is what's going to happen, because this is the stuff that people are going to be looking for interaction, for that digital world that we're coming to live in this post-COVID era right now, with the world of live events. You know, even Scott was talking the other day, he and I were talking privately, then we talked in the pre-show, the pre-CES show on Plug Hits Live Radio, about the Justin Bieber concert that just happened, where they actively made it a live concert. They put a stage in the middle of a big quadrangle of a high-rise hotel, and then they basically sold all the rooms to attendees, you know? So you got to enjoy the show and be in your own private room while you did it. Like, really cool innovations in the technological world, and outside-of-the-box thinking for live events. That's what it's going to take for us to return to a type of normalcy when it comes to the world of live events, when it comes to things like CES, when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Normalcy is not going to happen this year, and that's okay.
No.
Sorry. This year. I apologize. This is 2015. This is the wrong year. I'm sorry. I'm still set up from the past. I apologize.
But yeah, you know, like I said,
believe it or not, this was the entire branding for CES 2015. That was
my first year.
That was pretty much the extent of what we had. That and one of those pull up banners at the studio, and that was it. So we've come a long way since then.
That's right.
And of course, with that this is the end. We know it's gone over time. Facebook is already gone, so one of the many reasons we recommend people watch us on Twitch or YouTube, because at 8 hours, Facebook is gone.
That's right.
Michelle learned that the hard, scary way last year. I remember getting panic messages.
Oh, no!
Yeah, it was so funny. But I really, yes, she did. That was from Michelle. This has been a great week. Obviously, Todd's not with us here to say goodbye, and that's because he is right now doing his 1500th episode of Geek News Central.
Which is awesome.
Congratulations, Todd.
It is such a milestone. It's unbelievable.
That's awesome.
So congratulations to him. And because he's crazy, having already done two live shows today, he decided to basically do two tonight. He's doing the anniversary and then still talking tech news.
That's my man right there. That's my man. That's where it's at.
Yeah. He's probably gotten out of that chair today, if I had to take a guess. Because he started with Podcast Insider and then did this for 2 hours. And then off he went and prepped for 1500. He and Kirk went off and prepped for 1500.
Man, and what an incredible milestone, you know, the 1500 episodes. Like I heard you saying earlier today,
I saw Kirk say
every week,
10 minutes into the 1500th episode, Facebook crashed on him and the stream went down. And so he just posted, go to live.geeknewscentral.com because he can fix that.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Because it's been today and nothing has gone right. And he knew that going into this, that if something was going to go wrong, it was going to happen today.
That's right.
But anyway, that does it. We have officially done 24 hours of CES live coverage for 2021. And it's so weird because we have done it not from CES.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're not in Vegas this year, guys.
I mean,
it's been very strange, but you know, the team has been together. We've been laughing the last hour or so. The staff private chat has been absolutely on fire. It's been ridiculous because we're not in Vegas doesn't mean we're not getting super punchy.
That's right. That's right.
And we're laughing at things that probably won't be funny tomorrow, but that's okay. So for those of you who are still watching and may have missed content, there are a couple of ways that you can see everything that we've done. The first is you can go to plughitslive.com/join us, to techpodcasts.com/CES2021. Find us on YouTube, find us on Twitch, and watch the replays. But that's going to mean having to jump through all of our vamping when guests don't show up and things like that. You can also follow us on Facebook or YouTube for when we publish the final videos. You'll get if you hit the bell, you'll get notifications when we post a new video. If you don't, you probably won't, because subscriptions don't mean much on YouTube anymore. If you're more of a podcast person, you can go into your favorite podcatcher and subscribe to Plug Hits Live Presents, to the Geek News Central special events feed, to the Tech Podcast Network special events feed. And as we publish, they will become available there. So basically, wherever you could possibly want to watch this, we probably will be. And if we are not, let us know. Let us know that place where you would like us to be, and we will try to be there too. So long as it doesn't kill one of us to try and hit one more publish target, because it does take a while. Now, the way that it works is the videos will go up starting in a couple of days. And this, for all of our guests who may not have heard how this works, starting in a couple of days, the interviews will go up three at a time, three per day, every day, until we're done. They will be published in the order they happened. So if you were on day one, you'll be published first. If you were on day three, you'll be published last. Just that's how editing works. Temporal is the best way to do it. Yep. And again, if you're subscribed somewhere, you'll get notified when they get published. If you are one of our guests, you will get an email with all of the links to YouTube and Facebook and Plug Hits and TPN, so that you can embed and share and all the things. So we had 121 interview slots. We probably had 10 or so no shows, because we probably had six or seven. Michelle, tell me if I'm wrong. And I think we had three or four yesterday. So I'm guessing somewhere in the vicinity of 10. Let's say 110 interviews. It's going to take a little bit of time for all of those to get published.
Yeah.
But you can follow along again, just about anywhere. So
we have a strong team.
We do. We do. We're very lucky to have a strong, dedicated team that's out there. I mean, killing it. Absolutely killing it this week. You've seen 4.5 of us, because you see Michelle for a couple of minutes a day. But you know, there's a huge team behind the scenes that you don't get to see. And, you know, without Terry and Adam and Kirk and Nancy and Dave and Michelle, did I miss anybody? I think I got them all that time. And without Steve, we wouldn't have Terry's availability. So big thank you to everybody. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
This honestly would not be possible without the team. So thank you to everybody.
They really make it seamless for you guys. They make it seamless for all of you viewers. You won't even be able to see any of the technical difficulties that we have really talked about because they're so good at their job, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why we're doing such a huge thank you to everyone, because they make it possible.
You should see, when we're doing one of these events, you should see the absolute sheer panic on the faces of even ourselves. When we're not on, we're doing producer duty and like running around. Battery's going to die. Lights turned off. Why did the lights turn off? This thing ran for 8.5 hours yesterday. Why is it off at 3 today? It is constant panic, but what you see on the air is none of that. And that's because we do have a really great team. So thank you to all of them. Thank you to our viewers who have been with us all week. The viewership has been, honest to God, off the charts this week for TPN. We are probably close to our old numbers of when we were at NBC Universal. And we had NBC Universal's backing. We get a lot of subscription numbers. A lot of people watch later, which is fine. But we've had a lot of live people this week. Great. So that's fantastic. Twitch has been a big help for us this week. So definitely subscribe. And I guess the last thing before we go, if you've been watching and you want to help support our coverage, there are two ways you can do that. The first is you know with Prime that you get free shipping, but there are other benefits as well. There's Amazon Prime Music, which gives you several million tracks available to stream for free. No additional charge on top of your subscription. There's Amazon Prime Video, which gives you TV, movies, documentaries, and more, all available as part of your subscription. There's also Amazon Prime Gaming, which is my favorite. You get free games every month, lots of them. You get perks for in-game activities, and you get one free Twitch subscription every month, which you can use to financially support the content creator of your choice. We would certainly appreciate it if it was us. But whoever you choose, you get to do that for free. And if you go to plugitslive.com/prime, there you'll see these features and a whole bunch more. And quick links to all of them, because honestly, trying to find out how to get the free games to tie your Twitch and your Amazon account together is not intuitive. So we've got a quick link for that and all the other features as well. I couldn't find it. I ended up using our own link because I couldn't find it on their website. So plunkitslive.com/prime, and then the service Privacy. It is honestly the only way I shop online. Privacy gives you a custom card number for every service that you use, whether it be Netflix and Hulu or Amazon and Target. You get a custom card for every one. You can pause it when you're not using it. You can change what bank account or credit card it applies to for every purchase. And it's locked to that provider. So if the card gets stolen, it can only be used there. If it's stolen from Target, what are they going to do? Ship you something? Return it. No big deal. All of that is provided to you for free. It doesn't cost you anything to use the service. They get paid when the credit card gets swiped. You're not the product either. So that's an important part. And they'll give you some money just to try their service. And all you have to do is go to plugitslive.com/privacy to get a couple dollars to try the service and to sign up and get started. So Michelle mentioned that one of the things that we've used it for, because we have an account for the company for Privacy, and so when we go do a number of years ago, we've talked about this after Collision a couple of years ago, somehow Spirit Airlines decided to charge our corporate card almost $9,000, and they wouldn't cancel it. And so we were out $9,000. And so one of the things that we do is that whenever Michelle books travel, we use one-time cards instead of, you know, specific ones for the service. We use one-time cards. So they're used once and then they're never good again.
That's great.
So it's a really great service. So plugitslive.com/privacy. That's the way to get that. And I guess with that, that does it for CES 2021. How weird is that?
Yeah.
2021, dude. Wow. Such a big milestone for the beginning of the year. And it's really awesome that we were able to accomplish so much this year, even it being virtual.
I know. You know, Michelle was really worried. She said it, I think, yesterday. She was really worried about this year, that it wouldn't feel engaging, that it wouldn't, you know, the exhibitor list is less than half of what it was last year. It was 4,300 last year. It's 1,887 last I looked this year. It's, you know, that's a huge hit to the exhibitor count. And a lot of the big guys were gone, but, you know, a lot of our regulars, I went down the list. I'm like, okay, who am I going to invite from last year? This one, not exhibiting. This one, not exhibiting.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we were kind of worried about how it was going to go. And it did not disappoint.
Yeah, it was still great. Yeah. Like I said, you could not have had, aside from the pressing of flesh, you could not have had a more CES than mm-hmm. to force everybody to attend digitally.
Right. And
to Terry, literally leverage the technology for right. attendees, exhibitors, everybody.
And Terry mentioned that we were worried about Roboticon too. And that one went well for us. And she says, it's not the platform, it's the team. And the fact yeah. that we have a strong team that was all dedicated to making this happen is why it was engaging. And I agree. We were very picky about our exhibitors, like we always are. I've gotten to the point where I curate very hard because, you know, Todd talks about it. The third time in 4 days that you talk about a cell phone case,
yeah,
you just want to push them off the tower because yeah. what's special about, unless it's a special cell phone case, you know, OtterBox or, you know, somebody like that, that's different. But, oh, ours is purple and sparkly. Great.
Yeah.
Not our show. That's, yeah. that's fantastic. There are accessory shows that you can go on. That's not our audience. And the third or fourth time you hear that, you're like, all right, you can go downstairs now. I will do this by myself. I know your entire pitch. leave the product. I'll do your pitch for you. But so we just don't invite those anymore. And I think the show's gotten way better since yeah. we decided not to do that. Because you get stuff like the airflow mixer and yeah. you get a $30,000+ medical device.
Yeah. Yeah.
We wouldn't have gotten that if we spent 10 minutes talking about a $3 cell phone case on Amazon.
Mm-mm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So anyway, it's been a great show. Thank you to everybody who participated, viewers, exhibitors, and of course the staff. And normally I would say here on behalf of the staff that's not here, but I don't think there are any. And so what I will say is... on behalf of the staff of all of our teams, I'm Scott.
I'm Danielle.
Hey, I'm Chris. Sorry,
Bruce. And I'm Danielle.
And we will see you for CES 2022, fingers crossed, from Las Vegas next January. Ciao.
Take care, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Talking Sound Podcast. For more episodes, industry news, and information, visit us online at TalkingSoundPodcast.com. Subscribe to the Talking Sound Podcast on Amazon Audible, Spotify, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, or your favorite podcast service. Get the latest Talking Sound videos on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Breach TV, or your Roku or Amazon Fire device with the APR TV app. Talking Sound is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great shows and content, subscribe to HCUniversalNetwork.com today. Until next time, watch those meters, gig safely, and keep reaching for 11.
Talking Sound.